Welcome to Polycast, an official podcast of Poulton Civilization Site. Daniel Quick.
Makalua.
Imran Siddiqui.
Cardamandua.
With guest co-hosts, Pinchak Canuck Soldier.
Click the link.
No, I'm not clicking Imran link.
It's an Poulton thread.
No.
Welcome to the 46th episode of Polycast, an official podcast of Poulton Civilization Site. My name is Imran Siddiqui. I am joined with a motley crew of people, started by Daniel Quick.
That's me.
Makalua.
Hello.
Cartamandua.
Greetings.
And a couple of guest hosts. Yes, people actually want to talk to us. The first one is Pinchak on the forums.
Hey, I'm very excited to be here. I actually wore a suit and tie.
Ooh.
As long as it's not the birthday one, we're fine with it.
Oh. Ooh. Okay. And we're also joined by Canuck Soldier.
Hello there.
Also known as John Ryder.
Now I'm infamous.
I've Done It, started by Andrew N., and yes, this is still a family-friendly show. If you have a look at the screenshot that goes with it, apparently a spearman defeated his rifleman.
Wow.
Yeah, that was unfortunate.
That probably pissed me off.
Spearman versus tank, round two.
Yeah, but he says managed to lose a battle where his odds of winning were 100%, but maybe he was saying it was a 99.9 and he rounded it up to 100. Well, it's too bad for that guy. Hope he gets over it.
Don't be singing any country songs anytime soon.
I lost my rifleman and I had 100%.
There's no singing rule. How can you forget this?
Right, everyone can sing but you, remember?
Yes.
Or Dan.
Oh, shoot.
Oh, Dan. I'm sorry, Dan. I forgot.
In the news today, we discussed how GameSpot released Civilization Revolution, the demo. We also discussed Electronic Arts extends their deadline on Take-Two offer, even though Take-Two is telling them, ha, sucks to be you, we're not buying. And we also talked about no Beyond the Sword for the Mac, because, let's face it, only 5 people really use the Mac anyway.
Theater, today we discussed our triumphs and our disappointments. A recent tip for gameplay experiences.
In Forum Talk, we look at defensive bonus associated with culture, good, bad, indifferent, and a limit on the vassalage era.
In the research lab, we discussed civ splitting and the issue of a megalopolis.
And in the Senate, we talked about the importance of blockades. Yarr!
Don't encourage him. Here's what's been making news in the Civ community.
Civ Rev Demo.
If you're on Xbox, you can have demo.
I'm not on Xbox, thus no demo.
Unfortunately, I don't think I'll ever demo it either, as I don't own any of the platforms, but I think it is interesting, Civ Rev in general. I want to talk about the entire future of the Civ franchise and how is Civ Rev going to affect it from here on out.
Well, hopefully it doesn't dumb down the rest of the franchise.
Yeah, I'll agree it's a much simpler game for a, I don't know whether it's a simpler audience or just a simpler platform.
There are lots of simple people in the world.
We can't all be smart enough to play Civ.
No. This is true, otherwise you'd be calling it an RTS.
Oh. I don't think it's a simpler audience or a simpler platform. I don't even think it's a simpler game necessarily. It's streamlined, and I know you might say, oh, but Dan, that's what Firaxis is. Why are you saying that while having had the chance to play it?
I think it will actually attract a different kind of audience. People that didn't think that they would be interested in Civ, they'll play it and they'll be like, okay, and maybe they'll come to PC. I don't know if that's likely. I don't know what kind of people play Xbox or PS3. I'm not one of those people.
I have an Xbox.
Ooh, that explains it.
Oh.
Oh!
I do have a Wii, but that's so I can play Mario.
You have an Xbox 360, Imran?
Yes.
Oh, so you've had the chance to get the demo then. Tell all.
No, it's not connected to the internet.
Good excuse.
It seems to me that it could help expand the Civilization brand. Plenty of people don't necessarily want to play a game that might last upwards of 10 hours.
It's true. I have a hard time playing those games.
The focus on a quick game, like getting a game done within a few hours, would especially be a boon for multiplayer stuff on, say, Xbox Live or something like that, or the PlayStation Network, because then you can actually sit there at one time and just finish up a game. It's kind of like speed chess.
Speed Civ.
You'd have to say it really fast.
Speed Civ.
God, someone unused my brain with his. We can do it on purpose.
Dance, monkey, dance!
So this demo lets you play until 1250 AD as either Julius, I can't believe I was betrayed, Caesar, or Cleopatra, bust or bust. We don't know her last name. Looking at some comments on GameSpot, Tyr to Polton, Civ Fanatics, and on 2K, seem to be generally positive comments about it, even from those who were skeptical about Civ Rev in general before. One person said that I thought it wasn't bad, but I can't imagine hardcore players liking it. I think it goes back to what's been said before, is if you go in with the expectation, whether you're a hardcore player or not, that you are playing Civilization V, you will be disappointed.
Yeah, I think that's a very bad way to go into it. It's not meant to be a Civ 5.
I also read some people complaining about the odd language that is used in the game. It's Firaxlish. If you listen to one of the latest Civ Rev podcasts where they talk about sound, one of the individuals behind it actually refers to it as Firaxlish. And they purposely made the dialogue so that it was not any word at all. A bunch of nonsense, and it's intended to add humor to the game, and few people said, oh, we find that distracting, that's terrible. Please say you're going to change that before the game is released. If you don't like it, then turn the sound off.
Yeah, I think we're definitely probably a little biased from day one because we're PC gamers here talking about a console game, for most of us anyway. But I'm in the thought that I hope Civ Rev brings more people eventually to the PC platform for Civ 5 or whatever call the next Civ game, assuming that there is one. But
heresy!
Think about how many pure strategy games are available for console. Probably a handful of that, like newer games.
So it's kind of their entry into a new market where they could get a lot more people. And maybe we'll end up where we'll keep having a streamlined version on the console and the more complex version on the PC, but you still might get people crossing over. You still might actually enjoy playing the simplified version sometimes, you know, like when you just want a short game.
Yeah, you'll probably get both people, the console gamers that will never move to the PC because, oh my God, this is complicated and long. And then you'll get the ones that, oh, I've played this out, it's getting boring, let's go see what the full game is like. I hope that if Firaxis at Take-Two sees that multiplayer can work on Civ, that maybe the next PC version will have something a little more robust than GameSpy, which I won't go into at this point lamenting all of its problems, but we all know that it's not exactly the primo method of connecting people for multiplayer. So it could be a good thing, could be a bad thing. I guess time will tell.
And if you want to grab the demo, it's just over 1 gigabyte in size.
That's not a big demo at all.
Compared to the demos of some of the MMOs I've downloaded, that's not big at all. Evil Acquisitions. Oh, no, Electronic Arts. Have they extended the deadline? Well, apparently, yes, they have. No, Take-Two, we're willing to wait a little longer so we can buy you out.
They're losing all their credibility.
Wait, they had some?
Oh, wait, you're right, sorry.
Yeah.
They didn't have any. No. Now we can just mock it.
Yeah, these constant extensions really do kind of lessen the impact of an announcement that, oh, we've extended the deadline, we will do it one more time. And by one more time, we mean one more time asterisks.
We really want you. Really, really, why don't you like me?
But we're not going to offer you any more money, even though Grand Theft Auto is selling like hotcakes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of kills any chance, I would think. If they would up their offer, maybe Take Two would take it. But if they're not going to up their offer, no.
Yes, and you know, EA has announced that they have reached a deal with the U.S. Federal Trade Commission not to buy Take Two. At least that's how it's framed on CNET.com, which, of course, I don't think EA and the U.S. Federal Trade Commission are the only ones that can decide whether Take Two is bought. You know, Take Two might have a say in that.
Only a little say.
The FCC wants to look over the proposed merger, or until 45 days after the government tells EA that it's okay to go ahead. And as Mackie said, the EA is not willing to offer any more money at this point, despite everyone knew going in that Grand Theft Auto 4 was going to sell very well, and it has. And now it's we're not going to be offering any more money. In fact, Take-Two reported its first profit in more than 2 years on sales of Grand Theft Auto 4, which you could then also say, well, then that's obviously not sustainable, that Take-Two hasn't been performing very well up to the release of Grand Theft Auto 4, and most of the people that really want it, they've already got it, so the next quarter comes around and sales are going to be down again, and they're just going to be losing money. So maybe the offer was fair, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, but the boom and bust cycle is all across the industry. When you have a game that's just come out, of course you show a profit, but you're going to end up banking a lot of that profit for further development of other titles, so you won't show profit for another year or two until the next cycle of something comes off. So it's no different than even EA's probably own. I mean, except they have things like The Sims and stuff, which they milk like crazy.
In a related article over on Bloomberg.com, Grand Theft sales partly reflect the weak U.S. dollar, as is being argued.
What?
Yeah, apparently in the United Kingdom, Grand Theft Auto 4 sells for almost £50, or almost $100, which is well above the U.S. price of $60. And in other parts of Europe, the game costs about €70, or $108 American.
That's called capitalism. We can charge more for our games.
Yeah.
Let me tell you how much they charge for hotels over there. Gosh.
I think the last time we talked about this potential takeover of Take-Two by EA, the Wedbush Morgan analyst Michael Pachter was quoted. He believes that EA will make the deal happen. Quote, we believe that once EA walks away and no other bidders materialize, it will be able to allow all parties to cool their heels and will be able to come back and complete the deal at a reasonable price, unquote. And apparently Pachter believes that a reasonable price per share is $27.54 U.S. And what's the current offer at the moment? Was it like $25 a share? Is that how we got the $2 billion offer?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was around that, yeah.
It's very optimistic of him, but I don't know if I'd agree.
It's in the realm of possibility, but we're talking some major dollars.
The thing that was really interesting about this comment was not so much that the underlying message is don't expect Beyond the Sword to come to the Macintosh, but this response was not well worded by whoever this Aspyr tech support person was. Quote, Warlords did not produce a great number of sales, far less than expected. There is also the problem of programming for Civ 4. While the actual game is fairly stable, not perfect of course, the code behind it on the PC side is a mess.
Oh.
What?
I'm sure his boss was happy with that.
I think they just did a burn on Firaxis with that.
I hope this person gets fired.
So then further, this kind of thrown together code makes it difficult to port the game and fix the problems that arise, unquote. So what had initially happened is this was posted by a relatively new user over at CFC, at least a registered user, posted the response. The moderator, Alan H., removed it while he verified its authenticity with Aspyr, which ported Civilization IV and Warlords over to the Mac, because it seemed out of character. But then the message was restored because Aspyr confirmed that that message did originate from one of their support engineers, and as was kind of alluded to before, one of their ex-support engineers now, I hope, we hope. Aspyr actually asked them to restore the initial comment and add the following. Quote, the response was poorly worded and Aspyr did not wish to imply that the base coding for Civilization IV or Warlords was faulty. In reality, the coding for the game is fine, it is just very complex, therefore making porting the game to Mac much more difficult than most games. While Aspyr is continually evaluating games to be brought over to the Mac platform, unfortunately this time there are no plans to bring Beyond the Sword over to the Mac. There are many different reasons for Aspyr to have made this difficult decision. Unquote. And that's interesting, that last sentence. There are many different reasons. I think we see one. What would the other reasons be?
You have dumb programmers that can't read complex code.
They are lazy. let's talk about how Warlords did not produce a great number of sales. Well, okay, it was a very small expansion compared to BTS, which resulted in a huge number of sales.
Yeah, and the time it takes and everything, and even and with Beyond the Sword being so much larger of an expansion, they also may not be sure that they would get enough sales to totally cover their cost of having to have a team off working on it, so.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's definitely the factor for them. I mean, Aspire's not a large company either.
And, what, there are like five people using the Mac? I mean, come on.
Oh, here we go again.
Yeah, if you're image editing, well, the Mac's a good platform. If you're gaming, well, you know, maybe you should get a new Mac.
Oh, that's right. Macs are marginally less useless because you can boot up Windows on it.
Well, I do think it's interesting that they didn't have a set response to this question. Because you think that this is a question they would have gotten a number of times. And it seems the companies usually have an official statement on things like this. And that this employee was able to ramble off whatever he felt he wanted to say seems really unprofessional and dangerous to the reputation of the company.
Can it be they did not get the question that often?
Well, even if all five people who owned a Mac wrote in.
You think that the PR people would be better organized to have canned statements about this kind of stuff when people are asking if they're going to produce X game or its expansion or what have you?
Yes, especially since they ported the first expansion, it seems a reasonable question. The second expansion comes out for the PC. Where's the Mac version?
Canned statement. We have no plans at this time, yada, 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 yada.
Well, on the other hand, I mean, maybe this is what we were talking about. This isn't a very big company.
HR is two people who know how to use a word processor. HR, PR, my bad.
No, the HR people do the PR. That's
that's what it is. Yeah. Okay.
That's probably closer to the case, yeah.
No wonder.
Got news? Email news@apolton.net or send a private message to Dan Q, Locutus, or one of the other news editors.
Be seated in the theater, where co-hosts share their gameplay experiences.
I'll set this one out.
Yeah.
Let's see, I was playing a multiplayer game. I think it was like 24 people were in it, or maybe even more. It might have been that mod where you can get more than the max, more than 18. And anyway, my strategy was to get the Oracle, catapult myself to Alphabet, and then go to each and every sieve and just trade them one technology while hoarding all the rest, pooling them into my sieve. To do this, to make sure I was the one that got the Oracle, I didn't build any defense. I built, I think, two workers, built one worker, had him chop out the other one, then chopped Oracle. Got the Oracle, got Alphabet within two turns, had traded techs with, I would say, maybe 70% of the players. My score went from nothing through the roof, and then within two turns, someone came by with a chariot.
Oh, no way. And
I stole an archer. I was in the process of building an archer, but I was so focused on getting the wonder built, it just didn't happen in time. So that was the biggest rise and fall I've ever seen in any game of Civ.
Wow.
My graph was like a spike, and that was it.
People do take lots of chances like that in MP games, and you kind of roll the dice. Is someone going to wander by and call your bluff? But when your score spikes so much, you're pretty well saying, look at me, I'm a target.
Yeah, well, my hopes was at that point I would be able to then focus on defense. But I think one more turn I would have got my archer. It was one of those. It came down to one turn, literally.
Well, I haven't played too much recently, but I did play one game the other night as a practice for a clan championship that we're running over in the MP League. And so I was playing this with my clan, and we're doing a 3v3, but we don't have enough people. We only have 5. So one of us has to take an AI on our side. So I volunteer to be on the side with the AI, knowing that this is be a death struggle, playing against 3 people who don't have an AI. And I ended up being on the front line civ on an Inland Seas map, with the AI in our back, in a position that a normal MP player would feed new units and stuff like that, which the AI isn't going to do. So needless to say, after about 45 minutes of a valiant effort, I get killed by an overwhelming stack of Keshniks and Knights. And despite my best efforts, I die. And it didn't help that I didn't start out with any horses, iron, or copper within the radius of my first two cities.
Not even any ivory?
Not even ivory.
Oh, no.
I had food resources, so my cities were growing. But I went to try and plant my third city, which I had to plant forward towards the enemy because that's where the resources were, and defend the onslaught of my MP friends. It didn't work out so well.
Next time, food fight.
Yeah.
Just throw all your food into the... You mentioned Knights, just throw it into the horse's eyes and they'll buck the rider off and he dies. And
I was using promoted spears against Knights. It was the best I could do.
If only you could have held out until tanks.
Spear versus tank.
And then you would have conquered. Well, we have a lot of triumphs to talk about. We are awesome Sith players. No wonder we're on this podcast.
Well, I thought about playing Civ the other day, and oh, wait a second. No, I really didn't think about playing Civ either.
I played a game last night.
Until 3 in the morning?
Part of the reason I was up till 3. Yes. Yes, actually. Monty was my neighbor, and he kept building stacks and stacks and stacks of stuff. But I wanted to see how long I could hold out or what it would take, and I didn't want to attack him. I just wanted to wait. So I put all, the way my Civ was arranged is that I had one city radius, and then next to me was Babylon on a kind of a little narrow strip of land, I guess, and Monty was above us in the north, and he'd just keep attacking my one city, so I just put all my stacks there. I think I ended up with like 20 units in my stack, and he just throw his stuff away constantly. It was kind of entertaining. I was constant war with Monty. I never attacked him. I just watched him die. I kind of liked it.
What, and you didn't try to load some units on a ship and attack one of your other cities?
No, I kept waiting for it. I thought, he's going to do something. He's got to do something. And I was really just testing to see how long he would do this. But I kid you not, we were at war for 95% of the game, and he just kept attacking the one city. And my units wouldn't even die. They would just...
laugh?
Yeah, and get more experience. I loved it. It was great. Morale was really high.
There's no culture better than pointing and laughing at Monty.
It's true. It was great morale. People came from all around the country just to mock Monty.
Heck, probably from all around the world.
Yeah, as I watched with glee as my musketman triumphed over his elephants. You know, I haven't played against my husband in a really long time. Maybe he's afraid of me.
Well, you know, considering the last time you were like, I'll crush you.
Yeah.
Don't do that, but I'm scared of you now.
She actually didn't even deny it.
Yeah, so my husband just came in, he heard me talking about him, and he gave me a very assertive and one of those stern looks like, why are you saying that you could beat me? It's a challenge.
Well, the challenger appears.
I'm always glad to help.
I'll let you know how it goes. This is Forum Talk, where we investigate hot Civ issues in the forums.
Defensive bonus associated with culture? I guess someone wanted to talk about that. They suggested it on the forums. I wonder if we could get him on the show. Oh, wait!
Yeah, well, this is what I'm wondering. I think it's a great game mechanic. Because if you don't want to build a military, then it's something to help defend. But literally, what's it relating to? Are the defenders holding up paintings and fighting with musical instruments? And on the flip side of that, when catapults reduce that defensive bonus, so what are the catapults doing? Destroying museums and temples? I just don't understand the life carryover.
Well, there's gameplay, and then there's realism. Not that I'm necessarily disagreeing with you, but we have talked about that before on the show.
Well, I always thought of it as a representation of how proud the people were of the culture of their city, that they're willing to put up with more stuff in a siege just because they're proud of their city and they want to see their city keep standing.
I totally agree with Maki on that one. I've always thought the same thing, that it was really a culture of the people, not necessarily their paintings. It's how they feel and their emotions and their morale.
Yeah, so when you're catapulting the morale necessarily, maybe not necessarily an actual building.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it's a great game mechanic, because like I said, if you don't want to build armies, then it is a way to defend. But I mean, walls, city walls, give you 50%, and you know, you can fairly quickly get up over 60% with nothing but culture. I think it should be nerfed a bit. I mean, actually, I would think it to be to the contrary. The more artists and cultured people you have, the less fighters, barbaric type people. It's like in the movie 300 when they were comparing Sparta to Athenia, and they had all the craftsmiths and whatnot, and then they had the soldiers. They both had high culture, but arguably Athena had more. They certainly weren't the better fighters.
No, but they still were able to fight, even though they had real jobs other than going to war. They still made valiant warriors out of when the situation necessitated.
I would agree with that, but I don't think it would give them an intrinsic bonus. At least not how it's represented in the game.
Yeah.
I think they should either make walls more powerful, or they should make the culture bonus less powerful.
Someone's in my head again. I was about to say something like that. Yeah, you would think that the city walls would provide more defense than the people going, you can't take my city, you infidels or something.
I've been trying to get into Mackie's head for years. Chris, what's your secret?
As a game mechanic, I think it works well, but it's too far out of line with reality. Now, I've seen culture defenses over 120%.
Well, it is hard to balance gameplay and real-life historical parallels, but seeing that you can reduce this with catapults, and like you know, other people have said, you're demoralizing the population and probably removing those cultural identities in the process. So, yeah, it might be a little unrealistic, but since you can bring a stack of catapults and raise the city as it is, I'm not sure how unbalanced it is.
Yeah, it's just a personal pet peeve, how catapults technically destroy culture.
They bomb my favorite beer hall. No!
That's exactly right. I have nothing left to live for.
Or wine bar, depending on where you live, you know, but same idea.
Yeah, Starbucks.
7-Eleven, oh wait.
No, wait. That would actually improve morale.
So still in forum talk then, the vassalage era limit, the Sultan of ATL, says that after playing many games, I'm convinced vassals should be replaced after defensive packs become available. I also think there should be versions of NAFTA, NATO, and the EU that can be built by allies to replace vassals. Huh?
He wants some sort of military alliances with special names, or...
As is pointed out in the thread, stronger form of a defensive pact would be a permanent alliance, but he also talks about, say, an economic alliance, an economic effect of NAFTA, for example. I don't think that vassals should be replaced after defensive pacts become available, but if you want to explore means for having greater economic ties, if that means we have some more useful options in the United Nations and maybe even the Apostolic Palace before that with regards to economic agreements, I think it'd be for that.
Yeah, I think adding a niche economic functions to another already there game mechanic would be the best thing. I don't think replacing anything is really needed. And most of those organizations, well, they're... they have good functions, but they don't always function like NAFTA well as they were designed to. But that's another issue.
Not maybe so much the mechanics, but even a name change. I mean, because you don't hear about vassals in the world nowadays or for past 100 years. Kind of like they changed the graphics after industrial era.
Yeah, that's probably why he suggested something like NATO. That would make sense.
Hegemon's running dog.
But historically, nations don't like to be referred to as vassals, even though that's what they were, like, you know, the former Iron Curtain countries, satellite countries.
you know, that's what they really were, but no one wants to think of themselves as vassals.
They were brothers in communism, not vassals, dang it.
Yeah, that's right.
So if somebody has a better word for vassal, mod it in.
I don't think there is a good word that you could use for, you know, every type of vassal-like situation that's better than vassal, because they want to pretend that they're actual separate, unrestricted countries.
How about lassavs? There you go.
Dan.
Yes.
These backwards words are really...
Research Lab, please say thanks.
Okay, so Mac, you will now introduce Research Lab. Thank you for volunteering. Come on into the Research Lab, where we explore concepts that are not in Civ yet, but maybe in the future.
Civ splitting. I believe we're talking here about, like, before when you would have Civil War and the Civ would go... Or historically, you could have one Civ split off from the other.
How did they go?
Attack the bigger empire. Suddenly it's the Russians and the Egyptians. The Russians eventually become Egyptians. That was a Civ 1 thing, though.
Yeah, so this DJB13 thinks this is an idea for Civ 5, where corruption has turned up significantly, especially for the earlier government civics. But you may choose to build as many forbidden palaces as you like, which significantly reduce corruption in the surrounding cities. The wording of this, to me, implies that civics that become enabled later on as you progress through the technology tree are better in the sense that corruption isn't as great. I don't see that gameplay-wise, and even as a realism argument, I'm not sure that's always true.
Yeah, we can corruption from Civ 3 to Civ 4 for a reason. I don't think anyone was able to argue that that was a fun mechanic. So I'm not sure where we could go with using corruption as the basis for this, even if maybe Civ splitting has some gameplay fun options, you know, in it.
Well, we can't forget sadists, though, John.
And personally, I could see this maybe as something that a single player might want to do, but I can't see if you're playing your friends that you'd want, you know, three of your cities to split off in the middle of a heated battle or something.
Yeah, that's going to be one of those things that automatically would get turned off in multiplayer. There's no way people would play with it.
We're out of here.
And then being able to build as many forbidden palaces as you like? What?
How is it a forbidden palace, then?
Yeah.
It is forbidden that you not build this. Do it. Do it.
The other thing that always bothered me, they say some civilizations have been very volatile. Like Matthew was pointing out, the Russians turn into the Egyptians or something. I mean, it's not like the Russians become the Ukrainians. I don't know. They're not going to spend all this time doing all the art and whatnot for minor civs that might split off. Because otherwise, if you're trying to say, well, it's more realistic, the Americans splitting off as, you know, whatever.
You know, the Confederates. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah, they can't be like, oh, well, the Americans have just split up. Now they become the Japanese. Like, what?
That would be hilarious.
Insert the turning Japanese song.
I think I'm turning Japanese.
Turning Japanese, yes, I think so.
DJB13 also says that civil order, which is reintroduced, is changed. No.
I don't want to get back to revolting cities and having to sit there and wait for them to straighten up so she can build things, please.
So basically, it wants everything that Civ 4 did good
to
be reversed.
Yes, I do not like this plan.
I don't think that'd be very popular. And it seems like even if it's just difficult to implement.
Yeah, it'd be a very complex thing to balance. I don't see it as being popular either.
Sorry, DJB13.
And then there's something about if a city with a forbidden palace gets a resistor in it, then there's something about it declaring itself an autonomous region, and half the soldiers ally with the rebels, so they're in the city, then the other half don't, they ally with you, and they're ejected from the city. Whoa.
This sounds too complicated.
Yeah, this...
I don't think this is a thing I would like.
Yeah, this might be material for a mod or something, but I don't see it as core game material.
Yeah.
Right, because I have enough time keeping wars with other civs. I don't need constant wars in my own civ, constantly. Because that's how it would be. Like, we would always have his name freaking out on you, and I don't think I'd appreciate that. I'm a better ruler than that.
Or that also certain civilizations would have preferred terrain.
What?
Something for about, well, if you're England and then your city is on a hill, then it becomes Scotland if it revolts, or something along those lines.
What?
Whoa!
What?
City on a hill. Woo, Scotland.
That's like realism and not at the same time. Maybe you're reflecting the geography of a civilization, historically speaking, but that does not necessarily mean that they prefer that terrain. It's where they developed in the world.
I think it would be nice if they coincided, say, like the Mayans and the Aztecs with more tropical areas, or the Vikings with more tundra-type areas, but a hill?
Yeah.
Megapolopolopolis.
Sebastian Yonker.
So how about in the modern future era when your city has size above 20? I guess we should say if your city has size above 20. And area between them is urbanized. It'll be nice if this can create one megacity with one screen to manage with production and development. Give the opportunity to create new buildings too and wonders. For megalopolises only, such as apartment towers, super speed trains, etc., I think it will be much more easier to control civilization on this level. Many times in the modern and future era, I have had more than 20 cities to control, and it was always problematic. Easier to control 5 megalopolises than 20 cities. Curiosity question to start. Do you usually play on large or huge maps, then? 20 cities? Ooh.
That's intense.
Yeah, that's about 10 more cities than I ever have in a game.
Also, if he was to do that, how would he control, like, production and things? Because I still appreciate, even if I had 20 cities, I'd appreciate being able to build 20 things at the same time as opposed to only 5.
It's very true, because sometimes you'll have a single city that can crank out a unit a turn. So if you start combining that with 5 other cities, you're still only going to get 1 unit a turn.
Right.
Yeah, city specialization is definitely something that most people enjoy. I know a lot of people I play with enjoy micromanagement. They don't want it removed. They actually want more of it because it can separate the above-average player to the very good player. I'm sure some people would be happy with this, but other people would probably not want to see it. It'd be a hard call.
I think there is a very good idea in there that would be pretty easy to implement, and that would be special buildings. Once you hit population 20 or up, it unlocks more buildings or maybe even wonders. That would be easy to implement and would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, that has potential. You know, we'd have to look at how to balance it, but you know, it's not all that outlandish, no.
You could have another set of art where your city upgrades again with the towers, and it sprawls out bigger and more to show that once you get past a certain population. But I guess they didn't do that in the original game because they weren't thinking that people were going to build that many large cities.
I would like it if in the artwork, the new artwork that you just suggested, they had an Empire State Building with King Kong on the top. Then I'd say, go ahead, redo my artwork, because that would be entertaining. But other than that.
Call in today.
In North America, the number is 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY. In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
You can Skype us at the Polycast or email us at polycast@polton.net.
For more information on Polycast, our sibling show, Modcast,
log on to the series' official website at polycast.polton.net.
Welcome to the Senate, where we discuss game strategy.
The importance of blockades, another topic over at CFC. This Henyo 10 asks of blockades, what is the purpose of it? What does it really do to the enemy? How many ships must be used to effectively blockade? It seems useless. And I phrase it as a question with that little at the end because he actually has a question mark. It seems useless question mark.
With the what at the end?
With a As opposed to a
Definitely sound effects episode.
This one user, Neckface, strange username, says some more points on blockades matey. So we obviously, he phrases it as a bit of a pirate.
All right, go.
Meaty.
Don't forget that one ship can blockade multiple cities within its effective blockade range. While a ship is blockading, it will not heal, so send your pirates in pairs if you can. Use one privateer to maintain the blockade and the others to experience farm out all the helpless caravels the AI sails around ye. Soon you'll be farming GGs and have monster ships to unlock West Point and upgrade to destroyers in a few years. And I'm going to rephrase this one ever so slightly. If you blockade a city by a privateer when you're at peace, you receive a portion of gold from the blockaded routes. Shiny ahoy! And finally...
Gee, I would want to rephrase.
And then finally back to a direct quote. Blockade all your enemy's ports and he or she won't have access to oversea imports. Yarr! There you go.
That was great. Actually, I had a dream last night where I was an actor in Pirates of the Caribbean.
All right, I was going to say, hopefully there was nothing about Dan in there when he said I had a dream last night. I was like, oh, God.
All right, blockades.
I think it's fair to say that blockades definitely vary in usefulness. For example, if you're not playing on a very water-heavy map.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're on a continent's map, it's not that much use. On an island's map, and I think I was playing this in one of the tournament games that we do over here, that it was an all-islands map. I was blockading off a neighbor to the north, and I actually managed to keep their technology level down enough that I got ahead of them and I could go take them over. So I had a lot of ships.
Yeah, one of the many variants that's popular in MP is OCC on islands. One city challenge. They've actually made blockading illegal in those games because it's so overpowered, blockading a single city on an island's map. So it has its niche usefulness, but overall, blockading naval cities, it can be useful, but not in every map.
I was going to say, I'd never really blockaded, pretty much because I never really understood how it worked, and I think one of the people that wrote on that thread said, you know, it doesn't really let you know what squares you're blockading. So it's kind of like, do you know if you're being effective?
I thought it had a highlight thing that showed you.
I think you have to understand naval trade routes fairly well before blockading becomes useful.
Blocking the aid.
There is a good way for competitive play and to have other people give you advice. That's the Apollyon University.
And we would find that where? Jeez.
Apollyon.net/forums.
Really? Wow. How could I figure that out from Apollyon University?
I don't know.
Sometimes I wonder. This is to the individual who left a voicemail towards the end of May. He said you were interested in coming on the show and talking about Civ. I haven't been able to reach you yet, so hopefully we'll be able to find out if you actually want to really do come on the show, whether it was just a prank call to make us feel like we're wanted. I don't know.
Why would he do such a thing?
Not about to give out his Skype handle over the show.
Do it. Who said that?
You.
All right.
You have been listening to episode 46 of Polycast, an official podcast of a Polton Civilization site. I'm still Makalua. Dan's still here.
Indeed I am.
But not for long, right?
Fortunately for you all, you can only handle my brilliance for so long.
Maybe I should rephrase it. I was joined by Dan and Imran.
Boy.
And Imran decided he'd join us again. How nice of you to grace us with your presence.
I had some time.
And also Cardamandor.
Hi, guys.
And our two guests today, Canuck Soldier and Pinchak.
Glad to be here.
Had fun.
Kill the subject. Oh.
Good job, Dan. Good job.
Alright. Are we done with this? I just got bored. Okay.
You just got bored?
I have a longer attention span than you.
Well, that's not hard.
New topic. before I stick my mouth, put my foot in my mouth.
You mean further in your mouth?
I'm so tired.
Record date?
June 7th, 2008.
SoundClips copyright Sue 4, Warlords, and Beyond the Sword expansion packs. Copyright 2008, Poulton Civilization site at apoulton.net.